corked the vial. "You have to drink this." She held the vial to Peony's lips, but Peony didn't move, didn't flinch. "Peony." Hand trembling, she coaxed Peony's head back. Her papery lips fell open. Cinder forced her hand to still as she lifted the vial, afraid to spill a single drop. She set the vial against Peony's lips and held her breath, but paused. Her heart was convulsing. Her head felt heavy with tears that wouldn't come. She shook her head harshly. "Peony, please." When no sound or air passed through Peony's lips, Cinder lowered the vial. She buried her head into the crook of Peony's neck, gritting her teeth until her jaw ached. Each breath stung as it entered her throat, rank with the stench around her. But even now, she caught whiffs of Peony's shampoo from so many days past. Clutching the vial in her fist, she gently released Peony, letting her slip back onto the pillow. Her eyes were still open. Cinder slammed her fist onto the mattress. Some of the antidote splashed up over her thumb. Squeezing her eyes until stars flashed before her, she slumped over and planted her face into the blanket. "Damn it. Damn it, Peony." Rocking back on her heels, she sucked in a long, uneven breath and gazed at her little sister's heart-shaped face and lifeless eyes. "I kept my promise. I brought it for you." She barely refrained from shattering the vial in her fist. "Plus, I talked to Kai, Peony. He's going to dance with you. He told me he would. Don't you get it? You can't die. I'm here. I..." A splitting headache rocked her against the bed. She gripped the edge of the mattress and lowered her head, letting it hang to her chest. The pain was coming from the top of her spine again, but it did not overwhelm her like before. Just uncomfortable heat, like a sunburn on the inside. It passed, leaving only a dull throbbing behind, and the thought of Peony's blank stare haunting her. She lifted her head and corked the vial with weak fingers, slipping it back into her pocket. Reaching up, she closed Peony's eyes. Cinder heard the familiar crunch of treads on the dirty concrete and spotted a medroid coming toward her, no water or damp rags in its prongs. It paused on the other side of Peony's bed, opened its torso, and retrieved a scalpel. Cinder reached across the bed and clamped her gloved hand over Peony's wrist. "No," she said louder than she'd intended. Nearby patients lolled their heads toward her. The android sensor rose to her, still dim. "Thieves, convicts, fugitives. You can't have this one." The android stood with its blank white face, the scalpel jutting from its torso. Bits of dried blood clung to the edge. Without speaking, the android reached forward with one of its free arms and latched onto Peony's elbow. "I have been programmed. I don't care what you've been programmed to do. You can't have this one." Cinder yanked Peony's arm out of the android's grip. The pincers left deep scratches across her skin. "I must remove and preserve her ID chip," the android said, reaching forward again. Cinder bent over the bed and plastered her hand against the android sensor, holding it at bay. "I said you're not getting it. Leave her alone." The android swung the scalpel up, burying the tip into Cinder's glove. It clanged, metal on metal. Cinder reeled back from surprise. The blade clung to the thick fabric of her work gloves. Gritting her teeth, she wrenched the scalpel from the glove and jammed it into the android's sensor. Glass shattered. The glowing yellow light flashed out. The android wheeled back, metal arms swinging, loud beeps and error messages spilling from its hidden speakers. Cinder barreled over the bed and slammed her fist into the android's head. It crashed to the ground, silenced, arms still twitching. Panting, Cinder looked around. The patients who could were sitting up in bed, blinking glossy eyes. A medroid four aisles away left its patient and rambled toward her. Cinder sucked in a breath. Crouching down, she reached into the android's shattered sensor and grabbed the scalpel. She spun back to Peony, the disheveled blankets, the scratches on her arm. the blue fingertips dangling over the side of the bed. Kneeling beside her, she asked for hurried forgiveness while she grasped her sister's fragile wrist. She spliced the scalpel into the soft tissue. Blood dribbled out of the wound and onto her glove, mixing with years of grime. Peony's fingers twitched when Cinder hit a tendon, making her jump. When the cut was wide enough, she peeled it open with her thumb, revealing bright red muscle. Blood. Her stomach squirmed, but she dug the tip of the blade in as carefully as she could, easing up the square chip.
"I'm so, so sorry,"
she whispered, setting the mutilated wrist down on Peony's stomach and standing. The grating of the medroid's treads worked closer.
"Ashes, ashes."
She spun toward the dry, sing-song voice, scalpel gripped firmly in one hand, Peony's chip protected in the other. The small boy in the next aisle shrank back as his dilated eyes spotted the weapon. The nursery rhyme faded away. It took Cinder a moment to recognize him. Chang Sunto, from the market. Sasha's son. His skin now glossy with sweat, black hair matted to one side of his head from sleeping too much. "Ashes, ashes, we all fall down." Everyone who was strong enough to sit up was staring at her. Stealing a breath, Cinder swept towards Sunto. She fished the vial from her pocket and forced it into his clammy fingers. "Drink this." The medroid reached the foot of the bed, and Cinder shoved it aside. It toppled to the ground like a fallen pawn. Sunto's delirious eyes followed her without recognition. "Drink it," she ordered, pulling out the stopper and forcing the vial up to his mouth. She waited for his lips to close around it, and then she ran. The sun momentarily blinded her as she bolted into the street. Blocked from her hover by the medroids and two gurneys of dead patients, she spun and ran in the other direction. She turned a corner and had gone four blocks when she heard another hover overhead, the hum of magnets awakening beneath her pounding feet. "Lin Cinder," came a booming voice over the speaker. "You are hereby ordered to halt and be taken peacefully into custody." She cursed. Were they arresting her? Planting her feet, she turned to face the white hover, panting. It was a law enforcement vehicle, manned by more androids. How had they gotten to her so quickly?
"I didn't steal it," she yelled, holding up her fist with Peony's chip enclosed. "It belongs to her family, not to you or anyone else."
The hover settled to the ground, its engine still thrumming. An android alighted from a ramp, its yellow light scanning Cinder up and down as it approached her. It held a taser in its prongs. She shuffled back, her heels kicking up debris on the deserted street.
"I haven't done anything wrong," she said, hands extended toward the android. "That medroid was attacking me. It was self-defense."
"Lin Cinder," said the machine's mechanical voice. "We have been contacted by your legal guardian in regard to your unauthorized disappearance. You are hereby in violation of the Cyborg Protection Act and have been labeled a runaway cyborg. Our orders are to apprehend you by force if necessary and return you to your legal guardian. If you come peaceably, this infraction will not be recorded on your permanent record."
Cinder squinted, confused. A bead of sweat rolled over her eyebrow as she looked from the android who had spoken to a second android just leaving the hover's ramp.
"Wait," she said, lowering her hands. "Audrey sent you?"
Chapter 28. The uncomfortable silence of the dining hall was broken only by the clatter of chopsticks against porcelain and the shuffling of servants' feet. Only human servers were present, a concession to Lavanna's avid distrust of androids. She claimed it went against her people's morals and the laws of nature to bestow fake emotions and thoughts on man-made machines. Kai knew, however, that she just didn't like androids because she couldn't brainwash them. Sitting opposite the queen, Kai found himself struggling not to look at her. It was both a temptation and a repellent, and both feelings irritated him. Torin was beside him, and Lavanna was flanked by Sybil and the second Thaumaturge. The two lunar guards stood against the walls. Kai wondered if they ever ate. The emperor's seat at the end of the table would remain empty until the coronation. He did not want to look at that empty chair either. Levana made a grand, flourishing gesture, drawing everyone's attention to her, though it resulted in nothing more than taking a sip of tea. Her lips curled as she set the cup down, her gaze meeting Kai's.
"Sybil tells me your little festival is an annual occurrence," she said, the cadence of her voice swooning like a lullaby.
"Yes," Kai said, lifting a shrimp wonton between his chopsticks. "It falls on the 9th full moon of each year."
"Ah, how lovely for you to base your holidays on the cycles of my planet."
Kai wanted to scoff at the word planet, but sucked it back down into his throat.
"It is a celebration of the end of the 4th World War," said Torin.
Levana clucked her tongue.
"That is the problem with so many little countries on a single globe. So many wars."
Something splattered on Kai's plate. He looked to see that the wonton's filling had been squeezed from its wrapper.
"Perhaps we should be glad that the war happened then, and forced the countries to conglomerate as they did."
"I hardly think it harmed the well-being of the citizenry," said Levana.
Kai's pulse throbbed in his ears. Millions had died in World War IV. Whole cultures had been devastated, dozens of cities reduced to rubble, including the original Beijing, not to mention the countless natural resources that had been destroyed through nuclear and chemical warfare. Yes, he was quite sure some harm had come to the citizenry's well-being.
"More tea, Your Highness," said Torin, startling Kai.
He realized he'd been gripping his chopsticks like a weapon. Grumbling inwardly, he sat back, allowing a servant to refill his cup.
"We can give credit to the war for bringing about the Treaty of Bremen," said Torin, "which has thus far been beneficial to all countries in the Earthen Union. We hope, of course, to see your signature on the document someday soon, Your Majesty."
The Queen's lips tightened against her teeth. "Indeed. The good of the treaties is thoroughly discussed in your history books, and yet I cannot help but feel that Luna, a single country ruled by a single government, provides an even more ideal arrangement, one that is fair and beneficial to all inhabitants."
"Assuming that the ruling government is fair," said Kai.
A flash of contempt set the Queen's jaw, but almost instantly faded into a serene smile.
"Which, of course, Luna has, as is evidenced by hundreds of years without a single uprising, not even the smallest protest. Our history books attest to that."
"Shocking," Kai would have grumbled if he hadn't felt Torin's glower upon him.
"It is a testament that every ruler strives for," said Torin.
The servants came forward and whisked away the first course, replacing it with silver tureens.
"My queen is as eager to forge a bond between Luna and Earth as you are," said Sybil. "It is a shame that an agreement could not be reached under the rule of your father, but we are hopeful that you, Your Highness, will be more accepting of our terms."
Kai again strove to loosen his grip, lest he accidentally leap across the table and jab a chopstick into the witch's eye. His father had tried every compromise imaginable to forge an alliance with Luna, except the one thing he could not agree to. The one thing he was sure would signal the end of freedom for his people. A marriage to Queen Levana. But nobody objected to Sybil's comment, not even himself. He couldn't get the image from today's meeting out of his head. The lunar mutations, the army of beast-like creatures, waiting. It chilled him not only because of what he'd seen, but of what he could imagine he hadn't seen. If he were right, then Levana had put her army out for show, as a threat. But he knew she wouldn't give her hand away so easily. So what else was she hiding? And did he dare risk finding out? Marriage? War. Marriage? War. The servants simultaneously lifted the silver domes from the trays,
releasing clouds of steam scented of garlic and sesame oil. Kai mumbled a thank you to the servant over his shoulder, but the words were interrupted by a gasp from the queen. She shoved her chair away from the table. The legs screeched across the floor. Startled, Kai followed the queen's gaze to her plate. Instead of thinly cut pork tenderloin and rice noodles, the plate harbored a small hand mirror set into a shimmering silver-white frame.
How dare you!
Lavanna turned blazing eyes on the servant who had delivered the meal. A middle-aged woman with fine gray hair. The servant stumbled back, her eyes round as the mirror. Lavanna stood so fast her chair tumbled to the floor behind her. A chorus of chair legs creaked on the floor as everyone stood.
Speak, you disgusting earthen! How dare you insult me!
The servant tossed her head, mute.
Your Majesty, Kai started. Sybil!
My queen.
This human has shown disrespect. It is not to be tolerated.
Your Majesty, said Torin. Please, calm down. We do not know that this woman is to blame. We mustn't jump to conclusions.
Then she must be made an example of, said Sybil, quite coolly. And the true perpetrator can thus suffer the guilt, which is often a far worse punishment.
That is not how our system works, said Torin. His face had flushed red. While you reside in the Commonwealth, you will abide by our laws.
I will not follow your laws so long as they permit disobedience to flourish, said Lavanna. Sybil!
Sybil rounded the queen's fallen chair. The servant backed away, bowing, muttering apologies and begging for mercy and not knowing what she said.
Stop it! Leave her alone! Said Kai, rushing toward the servant.
Sybil snatched a knife from the service table and held its handle out toward the woman. The woman took the knife, crying, pleading as she did so.
Kai's jaw dropped. He was both disgusted and mesmerized as the servant turned the blade toward herself, clutching the handle with both hands.
Sybil's beautiful face remained complacent. The servant's hands trembled and slowly lifted the knife until the glistening edge was poised at the corner of her eye.
No, she whimpered. Please.
Kai's entire body shook as he realized what Sybil meant to force the woman into. Heart racing, he squared his shoulders.
I did it!
The room stilled, silenced, but for the woman's bumbling sobs. Everyone turned to Kai. The queen, Torin, the servant with the tiny inflamed scratch beside her eyelid, the knife still in her hand.
I did it, he repeated.
He looked at Sybil, who watched him without expression, and then at Queen Lavanna. The queen fisted both hands at her sides. Her dark gaze seethed. Her complexion shimmered. In a single, tilting moment, she was hideous. With her ragged breath and sneering coral lips. Kai ran his dry tongue across the roof of his mouth.
I ordered the kitchen to put the mirror on your tray.
He pressed his arms firmly against his sides to keep them from shaking.
It was meant as a friendly joke. I understand now that it was an ignorant decision, and a joke that would not cross cultural lines, and I can only apologize and ask for your forgiveness.
He leveled his gaze at Lavanna.
But if forgiveness is not in your power, then at least direct your anger toward me, and not the servant, who would have had no idea that the mirror was there. The punishment should be all mine.
He had thought the tension bad during the appetizer course, but now he was choking on it. Lavanna's breathing returned to normal as her eyes weighed her options. She did not believe him. It was a lie, and everyone in the room knew it. But he had confessed. She opened her fists, stretching her fingers out against the material of her dress.
Release the servant.
The energy dispersed. Kai felt his ears pop as if the air pressure in the room had changed. The knife clattered to the floor, and the servant stumbled back, crashing into a wall. Her shaking hands flattened over her eyes, her face, her head.
Thank you for your honesty, Your Highness. Lavanna said, her tone flat and hollow. Your apology is accepted.
The crying woman was led away from the dining room. Torin reached across the table,
picked up the silver dome, and covered the mirror.
Bring our most honored guest her entree.
That won't be necessary, said Lavanna. I have quite lost my appetite.
Your Majesty, said Torin.
I will retire to my quarters, said the Queen. She was still battling Kai across the table, her eyes cold and calculating, and he was unable to look away. I have learned something valuable about you tonight, young prince. I hope you have learned something about me as well.
That you prefer to rule through fear rather than justice? So sorry, Your Majesty, I'm afraid I already knew that about you.
No, indeed. I hope you notice that I am capable of choosing my battles. Her lips curved, her beauty returning full force. If that's what it takes to win the war. She departed from the room like a feather, as if nothing at all had happened, her entourage falling into step behind her. Only when the guard's clomping feet had drifted down the halls did Kai slump into the nearest seat, head hanging over his knees. His stomach was heaving. Every nerve shook. He heard a chair being set upright, and Torin settled beside him with a heavy sigh.
We should find out who was really at fault for the mirror. If it was someone on the staff, they should be suspended for so long as the Queen is staying at the palace.
Kai lifted his head far enough to peer over the table's edge, seeing the towering silver dome in front of the Queen's abandoned chair. Inhaling a breath, he reached forward and uncovered the mirror, then grasped its slender handle. It was smooth as glass, but sparkled like diamonds when he twisted it in the dim lighting. He had only seen material like that once before, on a spaceship. Holding the mirror's face toward Torin, he shook his head, disgusted. Mystery solved, he said, turning the mirror around so that his advisor could see the strange lunar rune carved into the back of the frame. Torin's eyes widened.
She was testing you.
Kai let the mirror tip back onto the table. He rubbed his brow with outstretched fingers, still shaking.
Your Highness, a messenger clicked his heels from the doorway. I have an urgent message from the Secretary of Public Health and Safety.
Kai tilted his head, squinting at the messenger through his bangs.
Couldn't she send a comm? He said, checking his belt with his free hand before remembering that Lavanna had requested no port screens at their dinner.
He grunted and sat up.
What's the message?
The messenger stepped into the dining room, his eyes bright.
There's been a disturbance at the District 29 quarantine. An unidentified person attacked two medroids, disabling one of them, and then escaped.
Kai frowned, straightening.
A patient? We're unsure. The only android that would have recorded a good visual was the one that was disabled. Another android caught glimpses of the act from afar, but only of the perpetrator's back. We've been unable to get an accurate ID. The perpetrator didn't seem ill, though.
Everyone at the quarantines is ill. The messenger hesitated. Kai gripped the arms of the chair.
We have to find him. If he has the disease...
It appeared to be a female, Your Highness. And there's more. The footage we have shows her speaking to another patient, moments after she attacked the first medroid, a young boy by the name of Chang Sunto. He was admitted to the quarantine yesterday with stage 2 letamosis.
And?
The servant cleared his throat.
The boy seems to be recovering.
From what, the attack?
No, Your Highness. Recovering from the disease.
Chapter 29. Cinder slammed shut the apartment door and marched into the living room. Audrey was sitting stiff beside the hearth, glowering at Cinder as if she'd been waiting for her. Cinder clenched her fists.
How dare you send for me like some common criminal? Didn't you think that maybe I was in the middle of something?
How dare I treat you like a common cyborg, you mean? Audrey folded her hands in her lap.
You are a common cyborg, and one who is under my legal jurisdiction. It is my duty to ensure you don't become a menace to society, and it seemed quite clear that you were abusing the privileges I've allowed you in the past.
What privileges?
I've always allowed you freedom, Cinder, to do as you like, to go where you like. But it's come to my attention you do not respect the boundaries and responsibilities that come with that freedom.
Cinder frowned and drew back. She'd had her own angry speech repeating in her head the entire hover ride home. She had not been expecting Audrey to bite back with a speech of her own. Is this because I didn't respond to a few comms?
Audrey tucked her shoulders back. What were you doing at the palace today, Cinder?
Cinder's heart skipped.
The palace?
Audrey raised a calm eyebrow.
You've been tracking my ID.
You've made it necessary to take precautions.
I haven't done anything.
You haven't answered my question. Cinder's internal warnings went off, spiking adrenaline. She sucked down a breath.
I went to the protests, all right? Is that a crime?
I was under the impression that you were in the basement, working, as you were supposed to be doing. To sneak out of the house without permission, without even informing me, to attend some gratuitous parade, and all while Peony is... Her voice hitched.
Audrey lowered her eyes, collected herself, but her voice was thicker when she spoke again.
Your records also show you took a hover ride today, to the outskirts of the city, the old warehouse district. It seems clear to me that you were attempting to run away.
Run away? No, there's a... That's where...
She hesitated.
There's an old parts store down there. I was going for parts.
Is that so?
And pray tell, where did you get the money for the hover?
Biting her lip, Cinder sank her gaze to the floor.
This is unacceptable, said Audrey. I will not tolerate such behavior from you.
Cinder heard shuffling in the hallway. Glancing around the door, she saw Pearl sneaking from her bedroom, drawn to her mother's raised voice. She turned back to Audrey.
After everything that I've done for you, continued Audrey, everything we've sacrificed, you have the gall to steal from me.
Cinder frowned.
I didn't steal from you.
No? Audrey's knuckles whitened.
A few univs for a hover ride I could have overlooked, Cinder. But tell me, where did you obtain the 600 univs in order to pay for your...
Her eyes fell to Cinder's boots, lips curling in a sneer.
Your new limb.
Isn't it true that that money was reserved for rent and food and household expenses? Cinder's stomach clenched.
I screened Aiko's memory. 600 univs in just 1 week, not to mention toying with the pearls that Garen gave me for our anniversary. It makes me sick to think what else you've been hiding from me.
Cinder squeezed her trembling fists against her thighs, glad for once that she'd never told Aiko about being lunar.
It wasn't... I don't want to hear it.
Audrey bunched her lips.
If you hadn't been out dallying all day, you would know that...
Her voice rose, bolstered, as if anger alone could keep tears at bay.
That I now have a funeral to pay for. 600 univs would have bought my daughter a respectable plaque, and I intend to get that money back. We'll be selling off some personal belongings in order to afford it, and you will be required to make up your fair share.
Cinder gripped the door jamb. She wanted to tell Audrey that no fancy plaque would bring Peony back, but she didn't have the strength. Shutting her eyes, she planted her brow against the cool wood frame.
Don't just stand there, pretending to understand what I can be going through. You're not part of this family. You aren't even human anymore.
I am human, said Cinder, quietly. The anger drained out of her. She just wanted Audrey to stop talking so she could go to her room and be alone and think about Peony. The antidote. Their escape.
No, Cinder. Humans cry.
Cinder sank back, wrapping her arms protectively around herself.
Go ahead. Shed a tear for your little sister.
I seem to be all dried up this evening, so why don't you share the burden?
That's not fair.
Not fair?
Audrey barked. What isn't fair is that you are still alive while she is not. That is not fair. You should have died in that accident. They should have let you die and left my family alone.
Cinder stomped her foot.
Stop blaming me. I didn't ask to live. I didn't ask to be adopted.
I didn't ask to be made cyborg. None of this is my fault. And Peony isn't my fault either. And neither is Garen. I didn't start this plague. I didn't...
She stopped herself as Dr. Erlon's words crashed down on her. Lunars had brought the plague to Earth. Lunars were at fault. Lunars.
Did you just short-circuit?
Cinder shook off the thought and threw a silent glare at Pearl before swinging back to Audrey.
I can get the money back, she said. Enough to buy Peony the most beautiful plaque, or a real tombstone even.
It's too late for that. You have proven that you have no part in this family.
You have proven that you cannot be trusted.
Audrey smoothed her skirt over her knees.
As punishment for your thievery and for attempting to run away this afternoon, I have decided you will not be allowed to attend the annual ball.
Cinder bit back a wry laugh. Did Audrey think she was a fool?
Until further notice, Audrey continued, you will only go so far as the basement during the week, and to your booth at the festival, so you can begin repaying me for the money you stole.
Cinder dug her fingers into her thighs, too incensed to argue. Every fiber, every nerve, every wire was trembling.
And you will leave your foot with me.
She started.
Excuse me? I think it's a fair solution. After all, you bought it with my money. Therefore, it is mine to do with as I please. In some cultures, they would cut off your hand, Cinder. Consider yourself fortunate. But it's my foot! And you will have to do without it until you can find a cheaper replacement.
She glowered at Cinder's feet, her lip curled with disgust.
You are not human, Cinder. It's about time you realized that.
Jaw working, Cinder struggled to form an argument, but legally, the money had been Audrey's. Legally, Cinder belonged to Audrey. She had no rights, no belongings. She was nothing but a cyborg.
You may go now, said Audrey, casting her eyes toward the empty mantle. Just be sure to leave your foot in the hallway before going to bed tonight.
Fists clenching, Cinder drew back into the hallway. Pearl plastered herself to the wall, eyeing Cinder with disgust. Her cheeks were flushed with recent tears.
Wait, one more thing, Cinder. She froze. You will find I've already begun selling off some unnecessary items. I've left some faulty parts in your room that were deemed worthless. Perhaps you can find something to do with them.
When it was clear that Audrey was finished, Cinder stormed down the hall without looking back. Anger sloshed through her. She wanted to rampage through the house, destroying everything, but a quiet voice in her head calmed her. Audrey wanted that. Audrey wanted an excuse to have her arrested, to be rid of her once and for all. She just needed time. Another week, two at most, and the car would be ready. Then she really would be a runaway cyborg, but this time, Audrey wouldn't be able to track her. She stomped into her bedroom and slammed the door, falling against it with a hot, shaking breath. She squeezed her eyes. One more week. One more week. When her breath had begun to settle and the warnings in her vision disappeared, Cinder opened her eyes. Her room was as messy as ever, old tools and parts scattered across the grease-stained blankets that made up her bed. But her eyes immediately landed on a new addition to the mess. Her gut plummeted. She knelt over the pile of worthless parts that Audrey had left for her to find. A beat-up tread punctured with pebbles and debris. An ancient fan with a crooked blade. Two aluminum arms, one that still had Peony's velvet ribbon tied around the wrist. Clenching her jaw, she started sorting through the pieces, carefully, one by one. Her fingers trembled over every mangled screw, every bit of melted plastic. She shook her head, silently pleading, pleading. Finally, she found what she was searching for. With a dry, grateful sob, she crumpled over her knees, squeezing Aiko's worthless personality chip against her chest.
Book 4. The prince had the stairway smeared with pitch, and when Cinderella tried to run away, her left slipper got stuck.
Chapter 30. Cinder sat inside her booth, chin cupped in both palms, watching the huge net screen across the crowded street. She couldn't hear the reporter's commentary over the chaos, but she didn't need to. He was reporting on the festival that she was stuck in the middle of. The reporter seemed to be having a lot more fun than she was, gesturing wildly at passing food vendors and jugglers, contortionists on miniature parade floats, and the tail end of a passing lucky dragon kite. Cinder could tell from the hubbub that the reporter was in the square just a block away from her, where most of the events took place throughout the day. It was a lot more festive than the street of vendor booths, but at least she was in the shade. The day would have been busy compared to market days. Lots of potential customers had sought prices on broken port screens and Android parts, but she had been forced to turn them all away. She would be taking no more customers in New Beijing. She would not have been there at all if Audrey hadn't forced her to come, dropping her off while she and Pearl went shopping for last-minute ball accessories. She suspected that Audrey really just wanted to watch as everyone gawked at the limping, one-footed girl. She couldn't tell her stepmother that Lynn Cinder, renowned mechanic, was closed for business, because she couldn't tell Audrey that she was leaving. She sighed, blowing a misplaced lock of hair out of her face. The heat was miserable. The humidity clung to Cinder's skin, pasting her shirt to her back. Along with the budding clouds on the horizon, it promised rain, and lots of it. Not ideal driving conditions. But that wouldn't stop her. 12 hours from now, she would be miles outside of the city, putting as much distance between herself and New Beijing as she could. She had gone down to the garage every night that week after Audrey and Pearl were in bed, hopping along on homemade crutches so she could work on the car. Last night, for the first time, the engine had roared to life. Well, more like sputtered to life and spewed out noxious fumes from the exhaust that made her cough like mad. She had used nearly half of the plague research money Erland had wired her on a big tank of gasoline that, if she were lucky, would carry her at least into the next province. It would be a bumpy ride. It would be a stinky ride. But she would be free. Nope. They would be free. Her and Aiko's personality chip and Peony's ID chip. They were going to escape together, like she'd always said they would. Though, she knew she could never bring Peony back. She hoped that someday she would at least find another body for Aiko. Some other android shell, perhaps. Maybe even an escort with their tottingly ideal feminine shapes. She thought Aiko would like that. The net screen changed, showing the other favorite news story of the week. Chang Sunto, miracle child, plague survivor. He'd been interviewed countless times about his unbelievable recovery, and every time it sparked a little glow in Cinder's silicon heart. Footage of her mad dash from the quarantines had been played repeatedly on their screens too, but the recording never showed her face, and Audrey had been too distracted by the ball and the funeral that Cinder had not been invited to attend to realize the mystery girl was living under her own roof. Or perhaps Audrey just paid her such little attention that she wouldn't have recognized her anyway. Rumors abounded about the girl and Chang Sunto's miraculous recovery, and while some had talked of an antidote, no one was coming clean. The boy was now under the surveillance of the palace research team, which meant that Dr. Erland had a new guinea pig to play with. She hoped it would be enough, given that her role as a research volunteer was over. She hadn't had the heart to tell the doctor that yet, though, and the guilt clawed at her upon seeing a new monetary deposit every morning. Dr. Erland had made good on his promises. He'd set up an account ID linked so that only Cinder could access it, not Audrey, and had made almost daily payments from the Research and Development Fund. So far, he'd asked for nothing in return. His only comms had been to tell her he was still making use of her blood samples and to remind her not to return to the palace until the queen was gone. Cinder frowned, scratching her cheek. Dr. Erland had never had the chance to explain to her why she was so special when he was also immune. Her curiosity lingered in the back of her thoughts, but not as strongly as her determination to run away. Some mysteries would have to remain unsolved. She pulled her toolbox toward her on the table, fishing through it for no other reason than to keep her hands busy. The boredom of the past 5 days had led her to meticulously organizing every last bolt and screw. Now she'd taken to counting, creating a digital inventory in her brain. A child appeared across her work table, silky black hair pulled up in pigtails.
"Excuse me," she said, pushing a port screen onto the table. "Can you fix this?"
Cinder cast her bored eyes from the child to the port. It was small enough to fit into her palm and covered with a sparkling pink shell. Sighing, she picked up the port and flipped it over in her hands. She pressed the power button, but only gobbledygook filled the screen. Twisting her lips, she smacked the corner of the screen twice on the table. The girl jumped back. Cinder tried the power button again. The welcome screen beamed up at her. "Give that a shot," she said, tossing it back to the kid, who stumbled to catch it. The girl's eyes brightened. She flashed a grin with two missing teeth before scurrying into the crowd. Cinder hunched over, settling her chin down on her forearms and wishing for the thousandth time that Aiko wasn't trapped inside a tiny scrap of metal. They would be poking fun at the vendors with their damp, rosy faces, fanning themselves beneath the canopies of their booths. They would talk about all the places they were going to go and see. The Taj Mahal, the Mediterranean Sea, the transatlantic maglev railway. Aiko would want to go shopping in Paris. When a shudder ran through her, Cinder buried her face in her elbow. How long would she have to carry their ghosts around with her? "Are you all right?" She jumped and raised her eyes. Kai was leaning against the corner of the booth, one arm propped on the door's steel track, the other hidden behind him. He was wearing his disguise again, the gray sweatshirt with the hood pulled over his head. But even in the sweltering heat, he managed to look perfectly composed, his hair just tousled, the bright sun behind him. Cinder's heart started to expand before she clamped it back down. She didn't bother to get up, but she did mindlessly tug her pant leg down to cover as many of the wires as possible, once again grateful for the thin tablecloth.
"Your Highness."
"Now, I don't want to tell you how to run your business or anything," he said, "but have you considered actually charging people for your services?"
Her wires seemed to be struggling to connect in her brain for a moment, before she remembered the little girl from moments before. She cleared her throat and glanced around. The girl was sitting on the sidewalk with her dress stretched over her knees, humming to the music that streamed up from the tiny speakers. Shoppers mulled about, swinging bags against their hips and snacking on tea-boiled eggs. The shopkeepers were busy sweating. No one was paying them any attention.
"I don't want to tell you how to be a prince, but shouldn't you have some bodyguards or something?"
"Bodyguards?
Who would want to harm a charming guy like me?"
When she glared up at him, he smiled and flashed his wrist at her.
"Trust me, they know exactly where I am at all times, but I try not to think about it."
She picked up a flathead screwdriver from the toolbox and started twirling it over her fingers, anything to keep her hands preoccupied.
"So, what are you doing here? Shouldn't you be, I don't know, preparing for a coronation or something?"
"Believe it or not, I seem to be having technical difficulties again." He unhooked the port screen from his belt and peered down.
"You see, I figured it's probably too much to hope that New Beijing's most renowned mechanic is having trouble with her port, so I figured there must be something wrong with mine."
Screwing up his lips, he whapped the corner of his port screen on the table, then checked the screen again with a heavy sigh.
"Nope, nothing. Maybe she's been ignoring my comms on purpose."
"Maybe she's been busy?"
"Oh yes, you look completely overwhelmed." Cinder rolled her eyes. "Here, I brought you something." Kai put the port screen away and pulled his hand out from behind him, producing a long, flat box wrapped in gold foil and a white ribbon. The paper was gorgeous. The wrapping job, less so. Cinder dropped the screwdriver with a clatter.
"What's that for?"
A flash of hurt crossed his face.
"What? I can't buy you a gift?"
he asked in a tone that nearly stopped the electric pulses in her wiring.
"No, not after I've ignored 6 of your comms in the last week. Are you dense?"
"So you did get them?"
She propped her elbows on the table, sinking her chin into both palms. Of course I got them. So why are you ignoring me? Did I do something? No. Yes. She squeezed her eyes shut, massaging her temple. She'd thought the hard part was over. She would disappear and he would go on with his life. She would spend the rest of her life watching as Prince, no, Emperor Kai gave speeches and passed bills. As he went on diplomatic missions around the world. As he shook hands and kissed babies. She would watch him marry. She would watch as his wife gave him children. Because the whole world would watch it happen. But he would forget about her. Which is what needed to happen. How naive of her to think it could be so simple. No? Yes? She fumbled, thinking it should have been easy to blame her silence on Audrey, her cruel stepmother who had refused to let her leave the house. But it was not that easy. She couldn't risk giving him hope. She couldn't risk anything that might change her mind. It's just that I... She drew back, knowing she should tell him. He thought she was a mere mechanic, and he was, perhaps, willing to cross that social divide. But to be both cyborg and lunar? To be hated and despised by every culture in the galaxy? He would understand in a moment why he needed to forget her. More than that, he probably would forget her just as quickly. Her metal fingers jerked. Her right hand was burning hot beneath the cotton. Pull off the gloves and show him. She mindlessly reached for the hem, fingering the grease-stained material. But she couldn't. He didn't know. She didn't want him to know. Because you kept going on and on about the stupid ball, she said, cringing at her own words. He dropped a cursory glance to the gold box in his hands. The tension melted until his arms dropped to his side. Stars, Cinder, if I'd known you were going to embargo me for asking you on a date, I wouldn't have dared. She cast her gaze skyward, wishing he'd been at least a little annoyed with her response. All right, you don't want to go to the ball. Got it. I won't mention it again. She fidgeted with the fingertips of her gloves. Thanks. He set the box down on the table. She shifted uncomfortably, unable to reach for it. Don't you have something important to be doing, like running a country? Probably. Leaning forward, he flattened one hand on the desk and leaned over, straining to see into Cinder's lap. Her heart jolted as she scooted herself closer to the table, thrusting her foot as far out of his line of sight as possible. What are you doing? She asked. Are you all right? Fine, why? You're usually the prime example of royal etiquette, but you didn't even stand up, and I was so prepared to be the gentleman and urge you to sit back down again. So sorry to steal that proud moment from you, she said, sinking lower into her seat. But I've been here since dawn, and I'm tired. Since dawn? What time is it now? He reached for his port screen. 13:04. He paused with his hand on the gadget at his waist. Well, it's time for a break then, right? He beamed. Might I have the honor of treating you to lunch? Panic sparked in the back of her head, and she sat straight up. Of course not. Why? Because I'm working. I can't just leave. He raised an eyebrow at the piles of neatly organized screws on the table. Working on what? For your information, I'm expecting a big parts order to come in, and someone has to be here to receive it. She was proud that the lie sounded so believable. Where's your android? Her breath snagged. She's... not here. Kai took a step back from the table and made a show of looking around. Ask one of the other shopkeepers to look after your booth. Absolutely not. I pay money to rent this booth. I'm not just going to abandon it because some prince shows up. Kai inched toward the table again. Come on. I can't take you to the... B word. I can't take you to lunch. Short of my unplugging the processor on one of my androids, this could be the last time we ever see each other. Believe it or not, I'd actually kind of resolved myself to that fact already. Kai rested his elbows on the table, ducking so that the hood concealed his eyes from her. His fingers found a screw, began twisting it between them. Will you be watching the coronation at least? She hesitated before shrugging. Of course I will. With a nod,
He used the tip of the screw to scratch beneath his thumbnail, though Cinder couldn't see any dirt beneath it. I'm supposed to make an announcement tonight, not at the coronation, but at the ball, about the peace negotiations we've been having the past week. It won't be recorded because of Lavanna's ridiculous no cameras policy, but I wanted you to know. Cinder stiffened. Has there been any progress?
I guess you could say that.
He peered up at her, but couldn't hold the gaze long. Soon, he was staring past her, at all the abandoned parts. I know this is stupid, but part of me felt like if I could come see you today, if I could convince you to go with me tonight, then maybe I could still change things. It's dumb, I know. It's not like Lavanna cares if I, you know, might have actual feelings for someone. He craned his head again, tossing the screw back onto its pile. Cinder's entire body tingled at his words, but she gulped, forcing the giddiness away. She reminded herself that this was the last time she would ever see him.
You mean you're... The words dried out. She dropped her voice.
But what about Nancy? About the things she knew? Kai stuffed his hands into his pockets, the troubled look vanishing. It's too late. Even if I could find her, it couldn't happen today, or even before... And then there's the antidote, and I just can't wait on that. Too many people are dying. Has Dr. Erlon learned anything?
Kai nodded slowly. He's confirmed it as a real antidote, but he says they can't duplicate it.
What? Why?
I guess one of the ingredients is only found on the moon.
Ironic, huh? And then there was the boy who recovered last week, and Dr. Erlon's been running tests on him for days, but he's being very secretive about it. He says I shouldn't get my hopes up that the boy's recovery could lead to any new discoveries. He hasn't said it outright, but I'm getting the impression that the doctor is losing hope of finding an antidote anytime soon. An antidote other than Lavanna's, at least. It could be years before we make any more headway, and by that time... He hesitated, eyes haunted. I just don't know that I could watch so many people die.
Cinder lowered her gaze.
I'm so sorry. I wish there was something I could do.
Kai pushed himself back from the table, standing again.
Were you still thinking about heading to Europe?
Oh, yes. Actually, I kind of was. She sucked in a deep breath. Do you want to come with?
He conceded a short laugh and pushed his hair back from his face.
Yes, are you kidding? I think that's the best offer I've ever had.
She smiled up at him, but it was short-lived. A single blissful moment of pretend.
I need to get back, he said, peering down at the thin gold-covered box.
Cinder had nearly forgotten about it. He nudged it across the table, pushing a neat row of screws along with it.
No, I can't. Sure you can. He shrugged, seemingly uncomfortable, which was an oddly charming look on him.
I'd thought for the ball, but, well, whenever you have the chance, I guess.
Curiosity boiled inside her, but she forced herself to push the box back toward him.
No, please.
He laid his hand firmly over hers. She could feel his heat even through the thick glove.
Take it, he said, and flashed his signature Prince Charming grin, as if he were completely unfazed. And think of me.
Cinder, here, take these.
Cinder jumped at Pearl's voice and wrenched her hand out from Kai's grip. Pearl swiped an arm across her work desk, sending bits and screws clattering to the pavement, then slammed a stack of papered boxes down in their place.
Put them somewhere near the back, where they won't get stolen, said Pearl, gesturing airily towards the back of the booth. Somewhere clean, if such a place exists.
Heart thumping, Cinder reached for the boxes and pulled them toward her. Her thoughts raced down to her empty ankle. How she would have to limp to the back of the booth. How there would be no way to hide her deformity.
What, no please or thank you? Said Kai.
Cinder flinched, wishing Kai had already gone before Pearl ruined the last moment she would ever see him. Pearl bristled. She tossed her long hair over one shoulder as she turned toward the prince, eyes darkening.
Who are you to...
The words disappeared, leaving her lips puckered in surprise. Kai pocketed his hands and eyed her with barely veiled disdain. Cinder wrung her fingers into the twine that tied Pearl's boxes.
Your Highness, please meet my stepsister, Lynn Pearl.
Pearl's lips parted, jaw dropping as the prince gave her a curt bow. A pleasure, he said, his tone too sharp. Cinder cleared her throat.
Thank you again for your generous payment, Your Highness, and, best of luck at your coronation.
Kai's gaze softened as he peeled it away from Pearl. A hint of a shared conspiracy touched the corner of his lips, something too suggestive to go unnoticed by Pearl. He dipped his head to her.
I guess this is goodbye, then. My request still stands, by the way, if you change your mind.
To Cinder's relief, he didn't elaborate, just turned and disappeared into the crowd. Pearl followed him with her eyes. Cinder wanted to as well, but she forced herself to look at the stack of shopping boxes.
Yes, of course, she said, as if the prince's interruption hadn't happened. I'll just put these on the shelf back here.
Pearl slammed her hand down on top of Cinder's, halting her. Her eyes were wide, disbelieving.
That was the prince!
Cinder feigned indifference.
I fixed one of the royal androids last week. He was just coming to pay me.
A crease formed between Pearl's eyebrows. Her lips tightened. Her suspicious gaze fell down to the thin gold box that Kai had left behind. Without hesitation, she snatched it up. Cinder gasped and swiped for the box, but Pearl danced out of reach. Cinder had her knee up on the table, prepared to lunge over it, when she realized what a catastrophe that would be. Pulse racing, she froze and watched as Pearl tore the bow and let it drop to the dusty ground, then shredded the gold paper. The box beneath was simple and white, unmarked. She lifted the lid. Cinder tilted her head up, trying to peer inside as Pearl gawked down at the gift. She could see crinkles of tissue paper and something white and silky. She analyzed Pearl's face, trying to judge her reaction, but could only pinpoint confusion.
Is this a joke?
Saying nothing, Cinder slowly backed up, lowering her knee off the table. Pearl tilted the box so Cinder could see. Inside was the finest pair of gloves she could have imagined. Pure silk and shining silver white. They were tall enough to cover her elbows, and a row of seed pearls along the hems added the simplest touch of elegance. They were gloves fit for a princess. It did seem like a joke. A sharp laugh exploded from Pearl.
He doesn't know, does he? He doesn't know about you!
She clutched the gloves, ripping them from their tissue bed, and let the box tumble into the street.
What did you think was going to happen?
She waved the gloves at Cinder, the empty fingers wagging helplessly.
Did you think the prince might actually like you? Did you think you might go to the ball and dance with him in your pretty new gloves and your...
She scanned Cinder's clothes, the filthy cargo pants, the stained t-shirt, the tool belt strapped around her waist, and laughed again.
Of course not, said Cinder. I'm not going to the ball. Then what use does a cyborg have of these?
I don't know. I didn't... He just...
Maybe you thought it wouldn't matter, said Pearl, clicking her tongue. Is that it? Did you think the prince... No, the emperor would find it in his heart to overlook all your...
She twirled her hand.
Shortcomings?
Cinder squeezed her fists, trying to ignore the sting of the words.
He's just a customer.
The mocking light died in Pearl's eyes.
No, he's the prince, and if he knew the truth about you, he wouldn't have given you a passing glance.
Resentment flared in Cinder's chest. She leveled Pearl with her own glare.
Which is about as much as he gave you, right?
She wished she'd held her tongue the moment the words were out, but the outrage that flushed over Pearl's face was almost worth it. Until Pearl threw the gloves to the ground, then grasped the toolbox atop the table and heaved it over on top of them. Cinder cried out at the crash that followed, nuts and bolts skittering halfway across the road. The crowd stopped to stare at them, at the mess. Pearl angled her nose toward Cinder, her lips barely creased.
You'd better get that cleaned up before the festival closes. I'll require your help tonight. After all, I have a royal ball to attend.
Cinder's wires were still humming as Pearl grabbed her shopping boxes and marched away. But she wasted no time in hopping over the desk and crouching down beside the toppled toolbox. She turned the box right side up but ignored the loose parts, reaching instead for the gloves at the bottom of the pile. They were caked with dirt and dust, but it was the bits of smeared grease that made her heart sink. Cinder draped them over her knee and tried to smooth the wrinkles from the silk, only smearing the oil. They were beautiful, the most beautiful things she'd ever owned. But if there was one thing she knew from years as a mechanic, it was that some stains never came out. Chapter 31. It was a long walk home. Audrey and Pearl had left the market without her, anxious to get ready for the ball, which had been a relief to Cinder at first, but after the first mile of walking with her makeshift crutches digging into her underarms and messenger bag banging against her hip, she was cursing her stepmother with each limping step. Not that Cinder was in any big hurry to get home. She couldn't imagine what preparations she could assist Pearl with, but she didn't doubt they would be designed to torture her. One more evening of servitude. One more evening. The words propelled her on. When she finally reached the apartment, she found the hallways eerily quiet. Everyone was either down at the festival or getting ready for the ball. The shouts that could normally be heard behind closed doors had been swapped for girlish laughter. Cinder tucked the crutches beneath her sore arms and used the wall to guide her to the door. The apartment seemed empty as she entered it, but she could hear the floors creaking as Audrey and Pearl moved around their bedrooms toward the back. Hoping she might be able to make it through the whole evening without seeing either of them, Cinder hobbled to her small room and closed the door behind her. She had just thought to start packing in earnest when someone knocked at the door. Sighing, she opened it. Pearl was in the hallway, wearing her golden gown, all silk and seeded pearls and a neckline that plunged just how Audrey had requested.
"Could you have come home any slower?" she said. "We'll be leaving as soon as the coronation is over."
"Well, I'm sure I could have come home faster, except someone stole my foot." Pearl glared briefly, then stepped back into the hallway and did a half spin, letting the skirt billow around her ankles.
"What do you think, Cinder? Will the prince notice me in this?"
Cinder barely restrained the urge to slime her own filthy hands over the dress. Instead, she peeled off her work gloves and tucked them into her back pocket. "Is there something you needed?"
"Yes, actually. I wanted to ask your opinion."
Pearl hitched up her skirt to reveal mismatched shoes on her tiny feet. On her left foot was a small velvet boot, the color of fresh milk that laced up her ankle. On her right foot was a gold sandal tied with sparkling ribbons and tiny heart-shaped charms.
"Given that you're so close to the prince, I thought I would ask if you think he would prefer the gold slippers or the white."
Cinder pretended to think. "The boots make your ankles look fat." Pearl smirked.
"The metal plating makes your ankle look fat."
"You're just jealous because I have such lovely feet," she sighed in mock sympathy. "What a shame you'll never know the pleasure."
"I'm just glad you found at least one body part that's lovely." Pearl tossed her hair, a smug grin on her face. She knew that Cinder's jest had no grounding, and Cinder was irritated when the low insult brought her no pleasure.
"I have been rehearsing my conversation with Prince Kai," said Pearl. "Of course, I intend to tell him everything."
She swayed so her skirt caught the light.
"First, I'm going to tell him all about your ugly metal extremities and how much of an embarrassment you are. What a disgusting creature they turned you into. And I'm going to make sure he also realizes how much more desirable I am."
Cinder leaned against the doorframe. "I wish I would have known about this little crush of yours earlier, Pearl. You know, before she passed away, I was able to obtain a promise from His Highness that he would dance with Peony tonight. I could have asked the same for you, but..."
"I guess it's too late for that now,"
Shame. Pearl's face flushed.
You shouldn't even say her name, she said, her voice a harsh whisper.
Cinder blinked. Peony? The anger in Pearl's eyes grew intense, overtaking the childish taunts.
I know you killed her. Everyone knows it was your fault.
Cinder gaped at her, unbalanced by the sudden switch from the immature boasts.
That's not true. I never got sick. It's your fault she was at the junkyard. That's where she caught it.
Cinder opened her mouth, but her jaw just hung.
If it wasn't for you, she would be going to the ball tonight, so don't try to pretend like you would have done her any favors. The best thing you could have done for Peony would have been to leave her alone. Then maybe she'd still be here.
Tears were pooling in Pearl's eyes.
And you try to pretend like you cared about her, like she was your sister, and that's not fair. She was sick, and you were meeting the prince, trying to catch his attention, when you know how she felt about him. It's sick.
Cinder folded her arms, protecting herself. I know you don't believe this, but I really did love Peony. I do love her. Pearl sniffed once, loudly, as if to stop the crying before it could overtake her.
You're right. I don't believe you. You're a liar and a thief, and you don't care about anyone but yourself. She paused. And I'm going to make sure the prince knows it.
The door to Audrey's bedroom opened, and she stepped out wearing a white and magenta kimono embroidered with elegant cranes. What are you two bickering about now? Pearl, are you ready to go? She eyed Pearl with a shrewd eye, trying to determine if anything still needed work.
I can't believe you're going, said Cinder. What will people think when you're still in mourning?
She knew it was a button she shouldn't push. An unfair comment when she'd heard them both crying through the thin walls. But she was not in a mood to be fair. Even if she'd had a choice, she wouldn't have gone. Not without Peony. Audrey fixed a cold glare on her, lips pulled taut.
The coronation is starting, she said. Go wash the hover. I want it to look brand new.
Glad she wouldn't be forced to sit through the coronation with them. Cinder made no argument as she grabbed her crutches and headed back for the door.
One more evening.
She turned on her netlink as soon as she reached the elevators, delegating the coronation proceedings to a corner of her vision. It was still the pre-ceremony. A parade of government officials was marching into the palace, swarmed by a sea of journalists and cameras. She picked up a bucket and soap in the storage room before hobbling toward the parking garage, half listening as the newscaster explained the symbolism behind different elements of the coronation. The embroidery on Kai's robe, the designs in the crest that would be raised when he took his vows, the number of times the gong would be struck when he ascended to the dais, all practices that had been around for centuries, cobbled together from the many cultures that had come together to form the Commonwealth. The news continuously switched between the festival and the city center to the occasional shot of Kai during his preparations. Only these latter bits snagged Cinder's attention away from the bucket of sudsy water. She couldn't help imagining she was in the palace with him, rather than this dim, cool garage. Kai shaking hands with some unknown delegate. Kai greeting the crowd. Kai trying to steal a private conversation with his advisor. Kai turning toward her, smiling at her, glad she was by his side. The momentary glimpses of him made Cinder's heart feel soothed, rather than injured. It was a reminder that much bigger things were happening in the world, and Cinder's yearning for freedom and Pearl's taunts and Audrey's whims and even Kai's flirting with her did not fit into that bigger picture. The Eastern Commonwealth was crowning its new emperor. Today, the whole world was watching. Kai's clothing blended old and new traditions. Turtle doves embroidered across his mandarin collar signified peace and love. Draped over his shoulders was a midnight blue cloak embroidered with six silver stars, signifying the peace and unity of the six earthen kingdoms, and a dozen chrysanthemums, signifying the 12 provinces of the Commonwealth and how they would flourish under his reign. A royal advisor stood beside Kai on the platform. The first rows of the crowd were made up of government officials from every branch and province. But Cinder's eyes were always drawn back to Kai, magnetically latching onto him again and again. Then, a small entourage came down one of the aisles, the last to take their seats. Queen Lavanna, along with two thaumaturges. The queen was wearing a delicate white veil that draped to her elbows, hiding her face and making her look more like a phantom than a royal guest. Cinder shivered. She didn't think any Lunars had ever been present at a Commonwealth coronation. Rather than making her feel hopeful for the future, the sight filled Cinder with a lump of anxiety, because Lavanna's haughty stance suggested that she belonged there more than any of the earthen citizens, as if she were the one about to be coronated. The queen and her entourage claimed the reserved seats in the first row. Those seated around them tried, unsuccessfully, to hide their distaste at being so close to her. Cinder pulled the sopping rag from the bucket and put her apprehension to work, scrubbing Audrey's hover to a fine gleam. The coronation began with a thunder of drums. Prince Kai kneeled on a silk-covered platform as a slow parade of men and women passed before him, each dropping a ribbon or a medallion or jewel around his neck. Each was a symbolic gift: long life, wisdom, goodness of heart, generosity, patience, joy. When all of the necklaces had been placed on him, the camera zoomed in on Kai's face. He appeared surprisingly serene, his eyes lowered but his head held high. As was customary, a representative from one of the other five earthen kingdoms had been selected to officiate the coronation in order to show that the other countries would honor and respect the new sovereign's right to govern. They had selected European Federation's Prime Minister Bromstad, a tall, blonde man with broad shoulders. Cinder had always thought that he looked more like a farmer than a politician. He held out an old-fashioned paper scroll that contained all the promises Kai was making to his people when he accepted the role of emperor. As both of the prime minister's hands gripped either end of the scroll, he spoke a series of vows, and Kai repeated after him. "I solemnly swear to govern the peoples of the Eastern Commonwealth according to the laws and customs as laid down by generations of past rulers," he recited. "I will use all the power bestowed on me to further justice, to be merciful, to honor the inherent rights of all peoples, to respect the peace between all nations, to rule with kindness and patience, and to seek the wisdom and counsel of my peers and brethren. All this I promise to do today and for all the days of my reign, before all the witnesses of the earth and heavens." Cinder's heart swelled as she scrubbed the hood. She had never seen Kai look so serious or so handsome. She feared for him a bit, knowing how nervous he must be. But in that moment, he was not the prince who had brought a broken android to the market or almost kissed her in an elevator. He was her emperor. Prime Minister Bromstad lifted his chin.
"I hereby proclaim you Emperor Kaito of the Eastern Commonwealth. Long live His Imperial Majesty."
The crowd burst into cheers and animated chants of "Long live the Emperor" as Kai turned to face his people. If he were happy at his raised position, it was impossible to tell. His lips were neutral, his gaze reserved as he stood on the dais and the applause of the crowd surged around him. After a long moment of his own serenity clashing with the tornado of praise, a podium was brought to the stage for the emperor's first address. The crowd quieted. Cinder dashed water over the vehicle. Kai stood expressionless for a moment, staring at the edge of the platform, his fingers gripping the podium sides. "I am honored," he began, "that my coronation coincides with our most revered holiday. 126 years ago, the nightmare and catastrophe that was the Fourth World War ended, and the Eastern Commonwealth was born. It grew out of the unification of many peoples, many cultures, many ideals. It was strengthened by a single enduring belief that together, we as one people are strong.
We have the ability to love each other, no matter our differences. To help each other, no matter our weaknesses. We chose peace over war. Life over death. We chose to crown one man to be our sovereign, to guide us, to uphold us. Not to rule, but to serve. He paused.
Cinder pulled her focus away from the retina display, long enough to give the hover a quick inspection. It was too dark to tell if she'd done a decent job, but she had lost interest in perfection. Content, she dropped the wet rag into the bucket and sank against the concrete wall behind the row of parked hovers, giving the tiny screen her full attention.
I am the great, great, great grandson of the first emperor of the Commonwealth, Kai continued. Since his time, our world has changed. We continue to face new problems, new heartaches. Though a war between men has not been fought on earthen soil in 126 years, we now fight a new battle. My father was fighting a war against Letimosis, the pestilence that has ravaged our planet for over a dozen years. This disease has brought death and suffering to our doorstep. The good people of the Commonwealth, and all our earthen siblings, have lost friends, family, loved ones, neighbors. And with these losses, we face loss of trade and commerce, a downturn of economy, worsened living conditions. Some have gone without food because there are not enough farmers to toil the land. Some have gone without heat as our energy supplies dwindle. This is the war we now face. This is the war my father was determined to end, and I now vow to take up that torch. Together, we will find a cure for this disease, we will defeat it, and we will return our great country to its former splendor.
The audience applauded, but Kai showed no sign of joy at his words. His expression was resigned. Dark.
It would be naive of me, he said when the audience had quieted, not to mention a second kind of conflict, one no less deadly.
The crowd rustled. Cinder leaned her head back against the cold wall.
As I am sure you are all aware, the relationship between the allied earthen nations and Luna has been strained for many generations. As I am sure you are also aware, the sovereign of Luna, Her Majesty Queen Levana, has honored us with her presence for the past week. She is the first lunar sovereign to step foot on Earth for almost a century, and her presence indicates hope that a time of true peace between us is fast approaching.
The screen panned out, showing Queen Levana in the front row. Her milky hands were folded demurely in her lap, as if she were humbled by the recognition. Cinder was sure she fooled no one.
My father spent the last years of his life in discussion with Her Majesty, in hopes of seeing an alliance to fruition. He did not live to see the result of those discussions, but I am determined that his efforts will live on in me. It is true that there have been obstacles on this road to peace, that we have had difficulties finding a common ground with Luna, a solution that would serve both parties. But I have not given up hope that a resolution can be found.
He took a breath, then paused with his lips still parted. His gaze dropped down to the podium, his fingers locked around the edges.
Cinder leaned forward as if she could get a closer look at the prince as he struggled with his next words. I will...
He paused again, straightened, and focused his eyes on some distant, invisible point.
I will do whatever needs to be done to ensure the well-being of my country. I will do whatever needs to be done to keep you all safe. That is my promise.
He peeled his hands from the podium and walked off before the crowd could think to applaud, leaving a sprinkle of concerned but polite clapping behind him. Cinder's heart strangled her as the screen allowed another glimpse of the lunars in the front row. The veil may have hidden the queen's conceit, but the smug grins on her two attendants could not be mistaken. They believed they had won.
Chapter 32. Cinder waited half an hour before limping back to the elevator. The apartment building had come to life again.
She kept herself plastered to the wall, crutches tucked behind her, as neighbors danced by in their fine clothes. A few pitying glances turned on Cinder as she kept out of their way, careful not to smudge any of the beautiful dresses, but mostly her neighbors ignored her. Making it to the apartment, she shut the door behind her and listened for a moment to the blissful emptiness of the living room. She ran a mental checklist of everything she wanted to grab, green text scrolling across her vision. In her room, Cinder spread out her blanket and filled it with her few belongings, oil-stained clothes, tools that had never made their way back to the toolbox, silly little gifts that Aiko had given to her over the years, like a gold ring that was actually a rusted washer. Both Aiko's personality chip and Peony's ID chip were tucked safely in her calf compartment, where they would stay until she found a more permanent home for them. She shut her eyes, suddenly tired. How was it that with freedom so close on the horizon, she suddenly had the overwhelming desire to lie down and take a nap? All those long nights fixing the car were catching up with her. Shaking off the feeling, she finished packing as fast as she could, trying her best not to think of the risks she was taking. She would be considered a runaway cyborg for real this time. If she were ever caught, Audrey could have her imprisoned. She kept her hands moving, trying not to think of Aiko, who should have been at her side, or Peony, who should have made her want to stay, or Prince Kai, Emperor Kai. She would never see him again. She knotted the blanket corners with an angry tug. She was thinking too much. She just had to leave, one step at a time, and soon she would be in the car, and all this would be behind her. Settling the makeshift bag over her shoulder, she hobbled her way back to the hall and down to the labyrinth of underground storage spaces. Limping into the storage room, she dropped the bag onto the floor. She paused for only a moment to catch her breath before she continued, unlatching the top of the handheld toolbox and shoveling everything off the desk into it. There would be time for sorting later. The standing toolbox that came nearly to her chest was much too big to fit into the car and would have to be left behind. Her gas mileage would have been ruined with all that weight in the back anyway. She surveyed the room where she'd spent most of the past 5 years. It was the closest thing to a home she'd ever known, even with the chicken wire that felt like a cage and the boxes that smelled of mildew. She didn't expect to miss it much. Peony's crumpled ball gown was still draped over the welder. It, like the toolbox, wouldn't be coming with her. She moved to the towering steel shelves against the far wall and began rummaging for parts that would be useful for the car, or even her own body should anything malfunction, throwing the pieces of miscellaneous junk into a heap on the floor. She paused as her hand stumbled across something she'd never thought she would see again. The small, battered foot of an 11-year-old cyborg. She lifted it from the shelf, where it had been tucked out of sight. Aiko must have saved it, even after Cinder had asked her to throw it away. Perhaps, in Aiko's mind, it was the closest thing to an android shoe she would ever own. Cinder cradled the foot against her heart. How she had hated this foot. How overjoyed she was to see it now. With an ironic smile, she slumped into her desk chair for the last time. Pulling off her gloves, she eyed her left wrist, trying to picture the small chip just beneath the surface. The thought brought Peony to mind, her blue-tipped fingers, the scalpel against her pale white skin. Cinder shut her eyes, forcing the memory away. She had to do this. She reached for the utility knife on the corner of her desk, the blade soaking in a tin can filled with alcohol. She shook it off, took a deep breath, and rested her cyborg hand palm up on the desk. She recalled seeing the chip on Dr. Erlon's holograph, less than an inch away from where skin met metal. The challenge would be getting it out without accidentally splicing any important wires. Forcing her mind to quiet, her hand to still, she pressed the blade into her wrist. The pain bit into her, but she didn't flinch. Steady. Steady. A beep startled her. Cinder jumped, pulling the blade away and spinning around to face the wall of shelving. her heart pummeled against her ribs as she scanned all the parts and tools that would be left behind. It beeped again. Cinder's eyes dropped to the old net screen that was still propped against the shelves. She knew it was disconnected from the net, and yet a bright blue square was flashing in the corner. Another beep. Setting down the knife, Cinder slinked away from her chair and kneeled before the screen. On the blue square was scrawled, "Direct link request received from unknown user. Accept." Tilting her head, she spotted the DCOM chip still inserted in the screen's drive. The small green light beside it glowed. In the shadow of the screen, it looked like any other chip. But Cinder remembered Kai's response when she'd described the chip's shimmery silver material. A lunar chip. She grabbed a dirty rag from the pile of junk and pressed it against the barely bleeding wound. "Screen, accept link." The beeping stopped. The blue box disappeared. A spiral turned over on the screen.
"Hello?" Cinder jumped. "Hello, hello, hello! Is anybody there?"
Whoever she was, she sounded on the verge of a breakdown.
"Please, oh please, someone answer! Where is that stupid android? Hello?"
"Hello?" Cinder leaned in toward the screen. The girl gasped, followed by a short silence.
"Hello? Can you hear me? Is somebody—"
"Yes, I can hear you. Hold on, something's wrong with the vid cable."
"Oh, thank heavens," the voice said
as Cinder set aside the rag. She set the screen face down on the concrete and opened the door to its control panel.
"I thought maybe the chip had gotten damaged, or I'd programmed it with the wrong connection ID or something. Are you in the palace now?"
Cinder found the vid cable disconnected from its plug. It must have come loose when Audrey had knocked it off the wall. Cinder screwed it in, and a flood of blue light splattered across the floor. "There we are," she said, righting the screen. She jolted back when she saw the girl on the other side of the connection. She must have been close to Cinder's age, and had the longest, waviest, most unruly mess of tangled blonde hair imaginable. The golden nest around her head was tied in a big knot over one shoulder and cascaded in a jumble of braids and snarls, wrapping around one of the girl's arms before descending out of the screen's view. The girl was fidgeting with the ends, fervently winding and unwinding them around her fingers. If it weren't for the mess of hair, she would have been pretty. She had a sweet, heart-shaped face, giant sky blue eyes, and a sprinkle of freckles across her nose. She was somehow not at all what Cinder had been expecting. The girl looked equally surprised at seeing Cinder and her cyborg hand and dreary t-shirt.
"Who are you?" the girl asked.
Her eyes darted behind Cinder, taking in the dim lighting and the chicken wire.
"Why aren't you at the palace?"
"I wasn't allowed to go," Cinder answered. She squinted at the room behind the girl, wondering if she were looking at a home on the moon. But it did not look like any home at all. Rather, the girl was surrounded by metal walls and machines and screens and computers and more controls and buttons and lights than a cargo ship's cockpit. Cinder folded her legs, letting her footless calf dangle more comfortably over her thigh.
"Are you Lunar?"
The girl's eyes fluttered, as if caught off guard by the question. Instead of answering, she leaned forward.
"I need to speak with someone at New Beijing Palace right away."
"Then why don't you calm the palace information board?"
"I can't!"
The girl's shriek was so unexpected, so desperate, that Cinder nearly fell over.
"I don't have a global comm chip. This is the only direct link I've been able to get down to Earth."
"So you are Lunar." The girl's eyes widened to near-perfect circles.
"That's not... Who are you?" said Cinder, her voice raising. "Are you working for the Queen? Are you the one who installed the chip in that android? You are, aren't you?"
The girl's eyebrows drew together, but rather than looking irritated at Cinder's questions, she appeared frightened, even ashamed. Cinder clenched her jaw against the onslaught of questions and took in a slow breath before asking steadily,
"Are you a Lunar spy?" "No, of course not. I mean, well, sort of."
"Sort of?
What do you mean? Please listen to me."
The girl clenched her hands together, as if fighting an internal battle.
"Yes, I programmed the chip, and I am working for the Queen, but it's not what you think. I've programmed all the spyware that Levana used to watch Emperor Ryken these past months. But I didn't have a choice. Mistress would kill me if... Stars above, she will kill me when she finds out about this.
Mistress who? You mean Queen Levana? The girl squeezed her eyes tight, her face contorted with pain. When she opened her eyes again, they were glistening.
No, Mistress Sybil. She is Her Majesty's head thaumaturge, and my guardian.
Recognition pinged in Cinder's head. Kai had suspected the Queen's thaumaturge of putting the chip in Nancy in the first place.
But she's more like a captor, really, the girl continued. I'm nothing to her but a prisoner and a slave.
She hiccuped on the last word and buried her face in a bundle of hair, sobbing.
I'm sorry. I'm so sorry. I'm an evil, worthless, wretched girl.
Cinder felt her heart tug in sympathy. She could relate to being a slave for her guardian, but she couldn't recall ever being afraid that Audrey might actually kill her. Well, other than that time she sold her off for plague research. She clenched her jaw against the mounting pity, reminding herself that this girl was Lunar. She had helped Queen Levana spy on Emperor Ryken and on Kai. She briefly wondered if the girl was only manipulating her emotions now, before she remembered that Lunars couldn't control people through the net screens. Blowing her hair out of her face, Cinder leaned forward and yelled, "Stop it! Stop crying!" The crying stopped. The girl peered up at her with big, watery eyes. "Why were you trying to get a hold of the palace?" The girl shrank back and sobbed, but the tears seemed to have been startled out of her.
"I need to get a message to Emperor Kai. I need to warn him. He's in danger. All of Earth. Queen Levana. And it's all my fault. If I'd only been stronger, if I'd only tried to fight, this wouldn't have happened. It's all my fault."
"Stars above, would you stop crying?" said Cinder before the girl could dissolve into hysterics again. "You need to get a hold of yourself. What do you mean Kai's in danger? What have you done?" The girl hugged herself, her eyes pleading with Cinder, as if she alone could offer forgiveness.
"I'm the Queen's programmer. Like I said, I'm good at it, hacking into netlinks and security systems and the like."
She said this without a hint of arrogance on her wavering voice.
"For the last few years, Mistress has been asking me to connect feeds from Earth's political leaders to Her Majesty's palace. At first, it was just court discussions, meetings, document transfers, nothing very interesting. Her Majesty wasn't learning anything that your Emperor hadn't already told her, so I didn't think much harm could come of it."
The girl twisted her hair around both sets of knuckles.
"But then she asked me to program a DCOM chip that she could install in one of the royal androids, thinking then she could spy on the Emperor outside of the netlinks."
She raised her eyes to Cinder. Guilt was scrawled across her face.
"If it had been any other android in the entire palace, she still wouldn't know anything. But now she does know, and it's all my fault."
She whimpered and pulled the lock of hair into her mouth like a gag.
"Wait."
Cinder held up her hand, trying to slow the girl's rapid words.
"What exactly does Levana know?"
The girl pulled the hair out as tears started to slip down her cheeks.
"She knows everything that android knew. Everything she'd been researching. She knows that Princess Selene is alive and that that Emperor Kai was searching for her. She knows that the Emperor wanted to find the princess and instate her as the true Lunar Queen."
Dread squirmed in Cinder's stomach.
"She knows the names of the doctors who helped her escape, and this poor old woman in the European Federation who housed her for so long. Her Majesty's already sent people to hunt her down, using the information Kai had, and when they find her..."
"But what will she do to Kai?" Cinder interrupted. "Levana's already won. Kai all but said he was going to give her what she wants, so what does it matter now?"
"He tried to usurp her. You don't know the Queen. Her grudges. She'll never forgive this. I have to get a message to him, to somebody at the palace. He has to know it's a setup."
"A setup? What kind of setup?"
"To become Empress. Once she's in control of the Commonwealth, she intends to use her army to wage war on the rest of Earth. And she can do it, too. Her army. This army."
She shuddered, ducking her head as if someone had swiped at her. Cinder shook her head.
Kai wouldn't allow it. It doesn't matter. Once she's Empress, she'll have no more use of him.
Blood rushed in Cinder's ears.
You think... But she would be an idiot to try to kill him. Everyone would know it was her.
Lunars suspect she killed Queen Chanary and Princess Selene, but what can they do about it? They might think of rebellion, but as soon as they're in her presence, she brainwashes them into compliance again.
Cinder rubbed her fingers over her brow.
He was going to announce it at the ball tonight, she murmured to herself. He's going to announce his intent to marry her.
Her heart was racing, thoughts spilling over in her brain. Lavanna knew he had been searching for Princess Selene. She would kill him. She would take over the Commonwealth. She would wage war on the whole planet. She grasped her head as the world spun around her. She had to warn him. She couldn't let him make the announcement. She could send him a comm, but what were the chances he was checking them during the ball?
The ball.
Cinder peered down at her drab clothes, her empty ankle.
Peony's dress.
The old foot that Aiko had saved. The silk gloves. Her head bobbed before she knew what she was agreeing to, and she used the shelves to pull herself to standing.
I'll go, she muttered. I'll find him.
Take the chip, said the girl on the screen, in case we need to contact each other. And please, don't tell them about me, if my mistress ever found out.
Without waiting for her to finish, Cinder bent over and pulled the chip from its drive. The screen went black. Chapter 33. The silk dress felt like poison ivy sliding over Cinder's skin. She stared down at the bodice with its trim of delicate lace, the full skirt, the tiny seed pearls, and wanted to shrivel inside the gown and disappear. This was not her dress. She was a fake in it, an imposter. Oddly, the fact that it was wrinkled as an old man's face made her feel better. She snatched the old foot from the shelf, the small, rusted thing she'd woken up with after her operation, when she was a confused, unloved 11-year-old girl. She'd sworn to never put it on again, but at this moment, it might have been made of crystal for how precious it looked to her. Plus, it was small enough to fit in Pearl's boots. Cinder fell into her chair and whisked out a screwdriver. It was the most hurried fix she'd ever done, and the foot was even smaller and more uncomfortable than she'd remembered it. But soon, she was on 2 feet again. The silk gloves felt too fine, too delicate, too flimsy, and she worried she might snag them on some poorly placed screw. At least they, too, were covered in grease smudges, completing the affront. She was a walking disaster, and she knew it. She'd be lucky if they let her into the ball at all. But she would deal with that when she got there. The elevator was empty as she made her way to the parking garage. She rushed toward the abandoned car, the boots clipping awkwardly on the concrete floor as she tried not to trip on the too small foot and sprain her ankle. She could feel it precariously attached at the end of her leg. Not having had time to connect it to her wired nervous system, she felt like she was dragging around a paperweight. She tried to ignore it, thinking only of Kai and the announcement he was supposed to make that night. She reached the dark corner of the garage, already sweating from her exertion, and knowing it would only get worse once she got out into the city's relentless humidity. Before her, the car was sandwiched between two sleek, chrome-accented hovers. Its awful orange paint was dulled by the garage's flickering lights. It didn't belong. Cinder knew how it felt. She slipped into the driver's seat, and the smell of old garbage and mildew embraced her. At least she'd replaced the seat's stuffing and covered it in a scavenged blanket so she didn't have to worry about sitting on rat droppings. Still, she could only imagine what stains the car's frame and floorboards were leaving on Peony's dress. Shoving her thoughts to the back of her mind, she reached under the steering column and grasped the power supply and circuit wire she'd already stripped and wrapped. She fumbled for the brown ignition wire. Holding her breath, she tapped the wires together. Nothing happened. A drop of sweat rolled down the back of her knee. She flicked them together again. Again.
Please, please, please.
A spark lashed out from the wires,
followed by unhappy clattering from the engine.
Yes!
She pressed her foot down on the accelerator, revving the engine, feeling the car thrum and rumble beneath her. Cinder allowed one overwhelming cry of relief, then jammed her foot into the clutch and pulled the transmission out of neutral, reciting the instructions she'd downloaded a week ago and had been studying ever since. How to drive. Maneuvering out of the garage proved the most difficult part. Once on the road, her way was guided by solar street lamps and the pale yellow glow from apartment windows. The city's constant light was a blessing, as the car's headlights had been busted out. Cinder was surprised at how rocky the roads were, how much garbage and debris littered the pavement since hovers no longer required an open